Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, June 3rd, 2019. Sudanese military government denies firing live bullets at protesters.
He says the area next to the protester sit-in, in front of the army headquarters, is well known as a focus for many negative attitudes. They threaten the safety and security of Khartoum citizens, he says.
And journalists in the Sudanese capital are banned from reporting on the street protests.
We definitely can't go outside right now. I poked my head out once. Saw a lot of police, a lot of soldiers. Earlier in the morning, we went out on a balcony, saw dozens of soldiers armed, and once they saw us, they immediately started yelling at us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Security forces closed off streets and tried to clear protesters from a two-month sit-in where activists have been calling for a civilian-led democratic government after the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. As we hear from Naba Mohyeddin in Khartoum, events in the capital have taken a different turn.
The casualties came after gunfire erupted early Monday morning in Khartoum, as protesters say security forces attempted to clear their almost two-month sit-in around military headquarters. The Sudanese Professionals Association, the main protest group, accused the military of staging a coup against them and vowed more protests and nationwide strikes. Protester Mohamed Abbas is a member of the SPA. This is a massacre executed by the military council, he says. They lost their patience after 53 days, says Abbas, showing that it's a coup. This is a massacre executed by the transitional military council with planning from the camps opposing the nation's revolution, he says. Protester Abu Anas witnessed the attack. A big group from the Rapid Support Forces attacked us in the sit-in area, he says. They then surrounded the army headquarters buildings and gates. There was no army, says Abu. We were attacked by a huge force with live ammunition. There were many casualties. We moved to the borough area now and we're surrounded, he says. Thousands of protesters responded Monday by blocking roads and burning tires in parts of the capital. Sudan's transitional military council was set up in April after the army overthrew longtime President Omar al-Bashir. The council has agreed in principle to share power with civilians, but talks on forming a transitional government have stalled. The TMC said the raid on the protest camp targeted criminal elements near the protest site and that the protesters themselves were safe. Shams Eldin Kabashi is a spokesman for the TMC. He says the area next to the protesters sit-in, in front of the army headquarters, is well known as a focus for many negative attitudes. They threaten the safety and security of Khartoum citizens, he says. Despite the violence, the TMC said ongoing talks between the military and protest leaders on a transitional government were expected to continue later Monday or Tuesday. But Sudan's opposition and protest groups denied talks were possible after the violence. In a statement, they said they were halting all contact and negotiations with the military. The raid on the protest camp was not unexpected. A military statement last Thursday had called the sit-in a threat to national security. The United States Embassy in Khartoum on Monday condemned the violence. In a tweet, the embassy said Sudanese security forces' attacks against protesters and other civilians is wrong and must stop. Responsibility, it read, falls on the transitional military council. For Naba Mohyeddin in Khartoum, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
At least 13 people were killed and more than 100 others injured when Sudanese security forces stormed a city in protest near the military headquarters in Khartoum this morning, according to a committee of Sudanese doctors. Eyewitnesses say Sudanese Rapid Response Force used live ammunition to disperse protesters. We now go live to reporter Michael Atit in Khartoum. Michael, what is happening at this moment in the Sudanese capital?
Thank you, Tanza, for the opportunity. Since morning, when the The dispatch began at the military headquarters or at the Nile Street in Khartoum. Many people were just seated home and they were unable to access even the nearest market. Even to access the main street, it was impossible for them. So immediately after the event took place at the military headquarters where the sit-in were dispatched in a few days, so they immediately sent the signals to the mass public across Khartoum State to also begin demonstrations in all the residential areas and also in the neighborhoods. So in the neighborhood where I am in, since morning there were roadblocks being made by protesters, despite the presence of the Sudanese forces also across the road. So the mass public were really determined to the burning tire, chanting slogans for the transitional military council to step down and to turn and to give the power to the civilians. So that was the atmosphere in the morning. Currently, of course, this is a Muslim-dominated community. They have all gone for Ramadan breakfast. And I believe, according to my sources, after the breakfast, immediately, they're also going to come on the street. They will still maybe spend the night on the street demanding the transitional military council in Sudan to hand power to the civilians.
Talk to me about your work. You were supposed to have filed a story to us with comments from people that you have talked to. What happened?
It's a little bit difficult in this situation to access all sources. And the main fact behind it is just at around 5 or 5.30 this evening, everybody just got blocked from the internet. And, you know, we try to call here and there and cross-check with other friends and other people that we know. We got the same thing that, no, I cannot access internet now because I don't have the network, you know. So basically the authorities here have decided to maybe inform the telecommunications operators, networks, to block the internet because they are the users of the social media has really played a great role in this Sudanese revolution, and they are afraid if this network is still working, you know, it might still spread the information very fast, and that even will put the authority or even the Sudanese forces in a different situation altogether. And so as I speak,
yes.
I cannot browse, I cannot access internet on my phone, and that's made it difficult for me even to track my report for this evening for South Sudan in Focus.
And talk to me a little bit about the life on the streets. I mean, are you free to talk to people as a journalist in the capital?
No. This is not the situation here. It is very difficult. Okay, I'm here as a foreigner, but still, even the Sudanese journalists themselves, they still find it difficult to speak to protesters because they are also afraid of, you know, presence of the security forces around. So it is really difficult. So many journalists are here finding it difficult to carry out their work, and especially after the authorities also in Sudan ordered the closure of the Al Jazeera bureau office in Khartoum. So that has increased the fear, that has increased, you know, the fear of journalists reporting about the protest that is happening in Sudan.
All right, Michael Atit, stay safe, and thank you for giving us that update from Khartoum. That was my colleague Michael Atit speaking live from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Reporters in Khartoum say they continue to hear sporadic gunfire this evening forcing civilians to stay indoors. Yesterday, a group of Sudanese journalists came together to protest the closure of the Al Jazeera office in the capital last week. Reporter Jason Patinkin says Sudanese forces came within seconds and broke up the march. He says Sudan is back to square one.
Earlier this week, the government shut down the Bureau for Al Jazeera, the Qatari broadcaster. And yesterday, about 80 Sudanese journalists gathered together to protest the closure of the Al Jazeera office. And I was at the protest covering the event. And within seconds of the start of the protest, a truck with heavy machine gun, you know, armed soldiers came and broke it up and said, if you don't leave, we'll arrest you. So that protest moved inside the sit-in, but now that the sit-in has essentially been dismantled, that means there's no place that is free to press in this country.
So Jason, are you allowed to move freely? I understand that you're in your hotel room, but do you feel comfortable going out to report?
No, we can't. We definitely can't go outside right now. I poked my head out once. Saw a lot of police, a lot of soldiers. Earlier in the morning, we went out on a balcony, saw dozens of soldiers armed, and once they saw us, they immediately started yelling at us and running towards the hotel, so we went inside. So there's no way to go outside. Two reporters did go outside earlier this morning, and they were immediately detained by security forces. They were released on armed, alhamdulillah. But we're stuck inside. We can't go outside. That's the situation. We can hear things through the windows when there are gunshots outside, but we are unable to freely move about outside the hotel, so we're all cooped up in here.
If these reports are true, and then the media is being restricted in Khartoum, what do you think this means for the greater story, not only in Khartoum, but in Sudan in general?
In the past few months, there's been just such a dramatic change in this country. And it went from this repressive dictatorship to a country with freedom. Maybe not complete freedom, but many, many freedoms. And now it's clear that Sudan is back to square one. The ruling military junta it's very hard to see a difference in terms of practice between current people in charge and the previous people in charge.
And Jason, have the officials reacted to what seems like a turn of events in Khartoum? Has the military council said anything? Even the Sudanese Professionals Association, what has been their reaction to, you know, the last 24 hours of deadly violence that we've seen in Khartoum?
Well, the Sudanese Professional Association, which has been leading the protests, in large part, they strongly condemned the attacks. They referred to it as a bloody massacre, I believe. They've called for people to resist this, not with arms, not violently, but through civil disobedience. The spokesman for the military council, he reportedly said that there was no dispersal of the sit-in and that everyone is still there. Now, plenty of photographs show otherwise, and some video too, and many witnesses as well. So either he hasn't visited the scene, or he's misinformed, or he's making it up. The military, since he's the spokesman of the military council, it seems to mean that they're simply denying what their troops just did.
That was reporter Jason Patinkin speaking to Ayen Deng Bior via Skype from the Sudanese capital Khartoum earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Cameroon beefs up security around one of its only refinery after a weekend explosion at the site. We'll bring more on this story right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do when you are in a bad mood?
I usually would move away from the environment of the agitation and then get a quiet place and pray. Usually when I'm done praying, the agitation and the stress, I get some amount of relief.
Sometimes I decide to sleep and maybe read a novel that can make my mind come, like, back to normal. Yeah, that's what I normally do. I rather stay alone and I listen to music, uplifting music, music that has good lyrics that would uplift my spirit.
Okay, when I'm in the bad mood, I sometimes play video games just to make me feel happy.
Actually, I call mom, I talk to her, tell her what's disturbing me. She advises me then, you stay down there.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Cameroon has increased troops around its only oil refinery after a weekend explosion caused a shutdown of the facility. The government denies separatist fighters were responsible and says there will be no shortages of petroleum products. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
15 women are trying to buy cooking gas from a supplier in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Among them is 21-year-old Christine Enanga, who worries that in days ahead, she may not be able to find the commodity.
I came to buy 4 bottles of gas, but they told me they could not sell 4, that they could only sell 2, because other people are buying, and I know there will be serious scarcity in Cameroon.
Drivers are also buying and stocking fuel. The scare was sparked after a storage tank exploded Saturday night at Cameroon's only oil refinery in town of Limbe in the southwest region. The blast caused a fire that damaged parts of the refinery and shut down output. No lives were lost. Cameroon's Trade Minister, Luc Malguambarga Atangana, says there will be no shortages and no price increases of petroleum products.
Je voudrais tout de suite rassurer les populations, rassurer.
He says Cameroon, 2 years ago, found itself in a similar difficult situation when the national refinery shut down its doors for 8 months for rehabilitation and shortages in supply were minimal because they increased imports without increasing prices. He says people should remain calm and should not be scared. Rebels fighting to separate the English-speaking parts of Cameroon from the Francophone majority claimed responsibility for the explosion on social media. They said the refinery was attacked because English speakers benefit very little from the company. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says proceeds from the company are used to develop all of Cameroon. He refutes the explosion was carried out by secessionist fighters and says early investigations indicate it was an accident.
Les premiers éléments d'information dont nous disposons à ce stade convergent vers.
He says details of the accident that blew up parts of the refinery will be made public soon, and that the military has also been deployed to make sure the refinery and its equipment are totally protected. The refinery, which is almost entirely state-owned, supplies 2.2 million tons of crude a year to Cameroon and countries of the region, including Togo, Nigeria, and Ghana. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A new report states that illegal land grabs remains a big problem in Juba and other parts of South Sudan. The executive director of a group calling itself Nonviolence and Development says many South Sudanese complain about the delays in resolving court cases related to land disputes. The Jubek State Land Commissioner says his office will take legal action against land grabbers. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
39-year-old James Duku says he has been tracking a court case in which a former government official grabbed his aunt's plot of land in Juba's Tongping suburb, also known as Juba Nabari, 2 years ago. Duku says his aunt was living on another plot of land and wanted to sell the Tongping plot. He says when he secured a client for his aunt to buy the land and escorted the potential buyer to the plot, he discovered that strangers were living on the land. He says the people claimed the land belonged to their immediate relative but declined to reveal the relative's name. Duku says after failing to resolve the issue with the occupants, he filed a court case.
That land was grabbed by a former minister of the government. We went to court. The process is ongoing. We have the hope that maybe the court will rule the case in favor of my aunt because we have the original papers, whereas the defendant has a paper that has been forged. We don't know from where. So we are waiting for the judgment.
Duko claims that like the former minister, whom he declined to identify for fear of reprisals from government officials, either on him or his aunt, many officials have grabbed land illegally because judicial officers are corrupt. He alleges that land grabbers often bribe judges to rule in their favor, even when landowners have documents proving they are the rightful owners.
Sometimes you go up to housing and you see the name there does not represent the name with the forged document that the other party has. But then you see the judgment going for the defendant. You get confused. So I am asking that let the government intervene and try to correct the judicial system that is in place right now. Because we don't know what is happening, but it seems to me that judges sometimes are being played with.
Phobi Manza is the project coordinator for Safer World. Manza says South Sudan has no national land policies of its own, but uses the statutory laws of Sudan. However, she says the laws contradict each other and conflict with customary laws on land use. And Manza confirms that many people use their positions in government to grab land.
Public institutions are quite ineffective due to abuse of power by public officials and employment of unqualified staff in some departments. Meanwhile, citizens also do not consistently follow established procedure for land acquisition. They influence government officials to use unlawful procedure to allot and sell plots.
Manza says the discrepancies create gaps in the government's response to land disputes. Moses Mande, executive director of the South Sudan Organization for Nonviolence, says community members raised concerns about land grabs taking place at gunpoint. He says locals proposed establishing one specific court to handle land disputes instead of taking the cases to all different types of courts. Mande also says the government needs to document the rightful owners and digitize the locations of plots.
The other recommendation is also to develop and to highly computerized system where the rightful owners of the land, like the thumbprints and or even eyebrows, can be documented, and whoever wants to sell land will be sent there first for verification.
Kose Andrew Wani, chairperson of the Jubek State Land Commission, acknowledges that many people have filed complaints of land grabs by government officials and other individuals. ECEC is working with the commissioners to ensure that land sold illegally is returned to the rightful owners.
Some of them, of course, we take legal options. So for example, if somebody grabs a land, like already this land, of course, we are going to take into. They have already started, in fact. Somebody constructed a house in a place which is not correct, it is going to be destroyed.
Kose warns that any former or current official who sells plots of land illegally will be prosecuted. He says people who need land should consult with the State Minister of Physical Infrastructure. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
A Zimbabwe government minister's son has been caught up in a scandal, and critics say that shows the government's repeated pledges about intending to fix the economy and curb corruption has failed. Adi Gondo gives us more on the story.
Four police officers have been charged for under-declaring money seized in a sting operation on illegal money dealers. Detectives Tafazo Chidawa, Tendai Mangena, Edward Selemani, and Sidney Mgomba, attached to the Criminal Investigations Department's Theft from Car section, are facing criminal abuse of office charges. The detectives had raided number 3 St. Fernand flats on 5th Avenue in Harare, which held the offices of Neve Mchangwa, the son of the Minister of Information, Monica Mchangwa, and former advisor to the President, Chris Mchangwa. The raid took place on Tuesday, yielded $200,000 in unreported cash, according to media reports. Neve Mchangwa was not present when the officers pounced. His associates, Darlington Dawachiwara and Henry Abrahams, were, however, arrested on charges of illegal illegally dealing in foreign exchange. The officers then conspired and secured a bribe from Changwa's associates and proceeded to only seize US $40,000, of which US $20,000 was declared at their station. Political analysts point out that the information minister, Monica Mchangwa, has recently threatened to name and shame parallel market money dealers. Thomas Stole weighs in on the matter.
Well, this is hypocrisy in its highest order, really, because when he's pointing four fingers to the other people, the other finger is pointing right to her, because it's her son who has been caught up in this forex trading. But if the son has access to this kind of money, you then begin to ask yourself how much money is within the family and within the comrades who are running this government that is not within the official fiscal channels and RBZ. This could be a tip of the iceberg.
Stole says that the Zimbabwean government is kleptocratic and its actions have led to the economic meltdown. He says the country's fortunes will not turn around given the government's attitude toward eradicating corruption.
The regime's DNA cannot be read well without reading word corruption throughout. And that's what we are seeing, that this current government is not going to take us out of this crisis because of the systemic corruption that is endemic and prevalent within government. And we see this extending to the families of those who are connected to those in high public offices. The current crisis we are facing is man-made, and it's only a few people who are enjoying. There's also a selective application of the law where we see that those in high places and who are connected to high government officials can do wrong and get away with murder.
Government spokesperson Minister Mchangwa could not comment as the case is sub judice before the courts. The revelations about the minister's son came in the wake of a question and answer session in Parliament when opposition senator Lillian Timvias of the MDC Alliance queried the finance minister Ntuli Ncube over the steps being taken to curb illegal foreign currency dealings in the country. The finance minister stated that law enforcement agencies were pursuing the issue and that he was also monitoring the case. President Emmerson Mnangagwa introduced tough laws in 2018, ostensibly to deal with unlicensed foreign currency traders. The law stipulates up to 10 years in jail for those convicted and forfeiture of their assets. A number of high-ranking ZANU-PF and government ministers have been allegedly involved in corrupt deals in critical economic areas such as mining, agriculture, and fuel. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the Nyankol singing in her Dinka language about her heritage. We've been listening to Nyankol singing about her heritage. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.